Hello, welcome back to the Matt Pfeiffer Experience. I am your host, Matthew Pfeiffer, and I have on a very special guest today. Her name is Asia Scarlett Jones, and she and her office is in New York, downstate New York. And you guys know how we do things here and we like to bring on attorneys that I would hire myself or that I would refer to friends or family members. And she is someone that we connected on social media. And I really enjoyed her content, really enjoyed what she does, her passion, and someone who has that balance of really can get after you if you need her to, and at the same time is very empathetic towards her clients and towards their needs. And so, Asia, I'm going to kick it over to you. Thank you very much for allowing us to pick your brain and your experience and your time. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Sure, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. Definitely appreciate it. My firm is still a little baby. She's 4 years old. But before I founded my firm, I was in private practice. Before that, I was a court attorney. And then before that, I was a public defender at Legal Aid. So just that journey and trajectory to litigation, you know, I realized that we were missing something in the legal field. So I formed my own practice. You know, sometimes the best way to fix something is to step out and do it yourself.
Yeah.
Instead of looking to the system to fix and correct itself. So that's when I started my practice, and so far so great. And I feel like we're really reaching the families that we care about, and definitely in the communities that need the help.
I mean, you have a lot of experience, and it sounds like you started, you know, when people say they got it from the mud, it sounds like you really got it from the mud. So I'm definitely going to dig into that. But before I do, I want to ask, what made you decide to get into the legal field to begin with? Did you always know that you wanted to do family law, or were you thinking about like corporate or immigration or something like that and then backed into it?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I was all over the map. My first idea was I wanted to be a choreographer. My very Jamaican father was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So you're very stereotypical traditional family where you have to actually be a doctor, a lawyer, or something like that.
Yeah.
Luckily for him, I actually wanted to be an attorney after that. And, you know, I just got really, you know, passionate. I became really passionate about rights. You know, some people just don't have the ability to advocate for themselves. And I knew this from high school. I joined a debate team and I loved it. I had the opportunity to go into New York City and see like this crazy law firm. And, you know, I just fell in love. I fell in love with the idea of litigating in the very beginning. I definitely did not want to be a family law attorney at first. I thought I was going to do criminal, then corporate. And then a very close friend of mine had a family law issue. And then even myself, you know, within my family, we experienced that. And that's when that passion started, where, you know, children are our future and children are the most underrepresented community within court because they don't really have a voice. So I started with that idea in the back of my mind and just took off. So I knew I was going to law school. I knew I was going to be an attorney.
One of the things you mentioned that I don't think gets mentioned a lot, and I think that a lot of people, there's a lot of misconceptions that comes with it. In family court is people's rights.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, and people, because people don't know that side of it, people think that they're going to quote unquote win the divorce, mm-hmm. not realizing that the other person, your opponent, your, you know, soon to be ex, they have mm-hmm. rights to a lot of the different things too. Can you talk about that a little bit, about maybe like the misconception and how people might think they have like there's a sense of entitlement that they might have towards the kids or towards the house, towards retirement funds, not realizing that, you know what, we did build this together, and guess what, we're gonna have to split this amicably,
take it apart together. Absolutely. You know, that is a huge issue. I actually had a client meeting yesterday where, you know, I had to remind my clients, and it's always that tough love, right?
Yeah.
Listen, you're looking at it from your point of view, and you know, you don't pay me to only look at it from your point of view. That's a huge misconception. I meet so many parents, so many couples, so many wives and husbands, and I say the same thing. You know, you have rights, and so does the other side, right? They have a right to show up at court and tell their side. That's a part of our justice system, right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, they need to be afforded that opportunity. So when you have parents more so pertaining to custody, that's a huge issue. Like, money comes, money goes, you can make money again, but your kids are forever. And a lot of parents just assume, more so dads, that, you know, mom has custody, and moms also assume they have custody, residential custody. And I'm always trying to debunk that. Absolutely not. And if I meet a parent from the beginning, like the infancy of their child or children, I'm telling you from the beginning of that case, absolutely not. Let me just make this clear that you as a dad and you as a mom have equal rights until we get an order from the court. And that's a huge misconception, a huge problem within, you know, definitely family court, and trying to get families to understand that. And also when it comes to assets, that's also a huge misconception. And, you know, I try to post videos and, you know, create blogs and blogs to tell people, you know, marriage is real. Like, that's a business. And when it's time to unravel this business, you know, your assets, your debt, all of those things go into the table. Yeah. And, you know, that sense of entitlement has to go out the window because you're upset and you're leading with emotion. So you don't pay me to lead with my emotions ever. I'm going to tell you the law and what the law says, and then I'm going to help you through it. Yeah. And remind you that, you know, once upon a time, you loved this person, you know, for whatever reason. And, you know, as attorneys, we don't pick these people for you. So we can't change them and you can't control it. So get in and get out. That's always my advice when it comes to that.
When it comes to those rights, and that, you know, I think you spoke about it very, very eloquently, but I think a lot of times people also think that if someone cheats or if someone makes a mistake in the marriage, or if they're the ones, if the other person is the person who has a substance use issue, that somehow voids that person's rights and that they should. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. That's actually one of the most frustrating things I have to deal with as an attorney. You know, family law is very unique. We deal with a lot of personal things. And I'm very transparent with that. Listen, you're out. Your win is getting out of the relationship. That's what you do. When a person is no longer serving, you know, your purpose, right? Like, you're not happy. You need to break away, whether that's because of infidelity, you know, abuse, financial abuse. You know, there are so many things, or reasons why people no longer want to be together. That's your win. You get out. But the other things have nothing to do with your emotions, right? And it's easier said than done. We get that a lot when it comes to, like, dealing with parenting time, right? Like, he cheated on me, so he can't see the kids. Like, he didn't cheat on the kids. He cheated on you. Like, he might not be the greatest guy in the world to be in an intimate relationship with, but this man or woman loved their children, and they had showed nothing else but the utmost, you know, love for their kids. Why are you pulling the children away? And constantly reminding parents of this is like, you know, if I had a dollar for every time I had to say this, like, what does one have to do with the other? And, you know, I always encourage people to actually get therapy. And, you know, some people will look at it like, why do I need therapy? Because you still need to heal from that relationship before you enter into the other relationship, which is co-parenting, right? Or splitting assets. So your way of punishing the other person, because you can't really do so any other way, right, is by trying to take away what's there, rightfully there. And that actually hurts you more than it hurts them. So I never really understand that logic. And because people do it so often, I feel like it's something we have to overly empathize. Yeah. And to that point, sometimes people love that pit bull attorney that will go into the courtroom and destroy the other person, like bit by bit, piece by piece. And, you know, I used to do that when I first started litigating, until one time I like had this case and I watched another attorney do it. And it didn't sit well with me. And I realized, like, this is just not the answer. Like, it made our client feel good for that moment. But then you have to live with him and her after we're done with your case. And now we just expose, you know, your deepest, darkest secrets in front of a courtroom to make you feel really crappy because my client was upset that, you know, you slept with the mailman or, you know, you didn't pay the bills on time. So it doesn't serve your purpose or your family's purpose. Yeah.
And one of the things when I was working as a therapist and I would see a lot of these cases, I would tell people that if you're going to do this out of revenge, that it's fool's gold, because what happens is that exactly what you just said. Like, yeah, it fits for the moment, it feels good for the moment, but there's no end to it. You're gonna need more of it, right? So it's just like a drug. You're gonna need more of it.
Absolutely.
And the other part of it is that the person may not react the way that you want them to. You might get that high child support order, and they might be like, okay, not a big deal, right? And they go on with their life. And so ultimately, that thought process ends up hurting you in the long run. And monetarily, physically, financially, all of it, because what people forget about when it comes to a divorce is also the modification part.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. People waste a lot of money. And my clients are always shocked, because at some point I would say to them, like, you're paying me to do really nothing at this point, nothing that's going to change. And I think you should save your money before you invest more money into something that will never change. Like, you cannot change people. Like, allow that person to go off and maybe potentially ruin somebody else's life and leave you alone. Like, don't you want to sleep better at night instead of, like, spending all of your money trying to fight someone who just doesn't care? Like, some people legit just want to see the world burn. They have no, you know, self-awareness about that.
When it comes to rights and co-parenting, a lot of times people forget that the other person has their custody time, but they don't have to co-parent. They don't have to parent the way that you do on your time, you know. I'm sure you've seen situations where people are up in arms because one parent allows for them to get their ears pierced, allows for them to stay up a little bit later. The other person, you know, wants them to eat vegetables. The other person wants them to, you know, wants them to be complete vegan or something along those lines. One other person wants them to go to church. The other person's like, we're not going to church. As a matter of fact, you're going to cuss here. You know, what have you seen, and what do you do in those type of situations, you know, to possibly avoid modification? Or is it just, or is that just what needs to happen?
You know, the law as an attorney, especially in this area, is by far the most craziest thing I've ever experienced. I'm never going to stop, but to that point, I've seen so many things, heard of so many things, and I like to give my clients a bit of reality. Yeah. And I do this by, you know, inviting them into a snippet of just my life, right? Like, you're going to tell me all your personal details, and I remind them. So I've been married for now almost 13 years. I have two sons, and my husband, husband and I, you know, we do not always agree on the same things, right? You know, I tend to be more of the stricter parent, like, do your homework, eat your vegetables, no TV on a school day, you know, but my husband is more of the lenient parent, you know, and it took me years to realize that balance is perfection. You need that. So with people that walk into court and they want to control, because that's really what this is, it's control. That's all this is control. Nothing's going to happen to these kids, right? Going to bed an hour later never really destroys the child, especially if it's, you know, when they're with the non-custodial parent who they're probably not seeing that much anyway, right? And then they want to have fun. Like, you know, that at mom or dad's house, they have to go to bed at 9, and at, you know, the other parent's home, they get to go to bed at 11. Good fun. Kids need fun. Like, you know, So I tell my clients, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? Like, don't catastrophize the situation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do that. Like, what's going to happen? Like, he's going to fail. Has he failed yet? No, this is a straight A student, great kid, loves going over to the other parent's home. Why are we rocking the boat? You cannot afford to rock the boat. You know, most people can't. So that really stopped that modification, because modifications are very hard to actually win. Your kid, you know, honestly has to damn near be dying, or you have some type of professional to say something is wrong. Your emotions don't matter as a parent. It's, you know, that professional who can come in and say, you know, this child has been doing X, Y, and Z, and because of that, they are affected by this. This should stop. Until that happens, save your money and save your time. You're not going to be successful. The court doesn't care.
One of the things that's very unique to you compared to some other attorneys is that you really enjoy, I shouldn't say other people don't enjoy it, but one of the things that you really your target clients are men, are fathers. Why is that? Why do you like working with men in particular? And not that, and just for clarity for people, it's not that she doesn't work with men, with women. I'll let you explain that a little bit more.
I'm helping everyone whenever I've been bothered, actually, you know. It's for two reasons. One, it's definitely within a personal reason, just personal experience and watching someone very close to me go through a battle that ultimately didn't result in what he wanted. And then watching that child also suffer through it. It just ignites a fire in me to say, whoa, we have this all wrong. But another aspect is just how society, treats parents, and it's wrong. And that I cannot phrase it any other way. It is wrong to walk into court and feel that your rights do not matter. It takes two to tango. So you have rights as a child. So barring any order from a court, so this is not including neglect and abuse cases, that has nothing to do with this, or DV cases, absolutely not. That's different. But the very typical case where it's just that power control, I feel like dads normally walk away faster. They don't want to have to deal with the fight of, I have to fight for my child. No one should ever have to fight for their child. That sounds insane. So when I started my career at Legal Aid, I represented a lot of fathers. And I've heard so many stories that, really broke my heart. Like, you shouldn't have to go through this. And not everyone is that stereotypical dad where, they don't want to be involved with their children. They want to. They just don't know. And it shocked me sometimes. Like, what do you mean you don't know this? This is A, B, C. Like, go get your kid. Well, I can't because she said no. I don't understand what you mean. Is something wrong? Did you hurt her? Did you hurt the child or your children? No, I just don't want to be with her. So what does that have to do with seeing your kids? I hear this so often, and then they walk away. So they don't go to the parent teacher conferences, and that's the fuel that you're feeding to the other parents and use against you. They don't go to the doctor appointments because they don't know, because they're not allowed to, and then they're created to be the bad guy because they don't show up. The list is endless, of the things that I've heard and I see. So I do have a little niche for dads, because I feel like if there's someone telling them that you can step up, right, that you can actually get these things because you're entitled to it, it helps the kid. And I feel like moms, if it's that gender role, you deserve a break. Get a break. Give dad the child. Why not? How can you look at your kids and your children and not feel a little guilty for taking away one aspect of their life because you are upset? And kids really miss out. I mean, they miss out on so much. Another part of their life, their family, their paternal family. So I really do enjoy working with dads and watching them grow and realize, like, wow, I do have a right. And you do. So
what are some things that make a case with that you might be working with a dad unique compared to a woman? What are some things that would that are very different, some things that you might keep your eye on, some patterns that are consistent with when you're working with men versus women?
My female clients are very type A, and even myself, I'm like that. We are very prepared. We show up with binders, tabs. I mean, we're ready to go. Screenshots, emails, and we are used to stepping up when there's no one else there. So with those clients, it's a little easier when I need proof, when I need to, advocate for them on their behalf, because they already walk in with that sense of entitlement. And in some cases, they had no other choice. Like, the dad just didn't show up. He never really wanted to. But with my male clients, they are walking in already defeated without even stepping into the room. And it's really hard to motivate them to step up and get the things I need to advocate for them. And once they start to, while I'm representing them, understand what they need, they slowly start to match up to the other parent, right? They start behind the eight ball. And as we go through their litigation, they start to realize, okay, this is what I need to do. They feel more entitled and more confident in their decisions. And with that being said, you know, I always look across the room if I'm representing the mother to the dad and say, hey, if this man is crying, we're not going to stand in his way. Unless there's an emergency, we're going to let him do it. And let me show you how you're going to let him do it. How we're going to craft an order that protects the children, kind of give mom some type of like, you know, because it's trust. There's a breakdown in trust now. You know, some type of, you know, something to hold on to, but then also empowers the other parent so he can step up and do his job as a father and you can do your job as a mom. When it's the other way around, my female clients, you know, they need that. They need to see it. And I show them, you know, as we progress through our case, you see, he did this. This is a good thing. You can back down on this other thing. One doesn't have to do with the other. And I enjoy it. So I'm never going to turn away a client because, you know, she's a mom. I have a lot of male and female clients, and they equally thought out the thing until I could catch them up. And then now we're good. Now I'm even playing field.
When it comes to one of the hot topics on social media right now, when it comes to divorce, breakups, custody, is what I call the N word, the other N word, narcissism.
Narcissism.
You know? And so when you are representing the father, because oftentimes it's the mother who is saying that the other person is abusive, controlling, narcissistic. What are you seeing? Are those things true? Or are those things oftentimes misrepresentation of who your client actually is? Like, what's going on behind the scenes, and how do you cope with, and how do you and your client deal with someone making those type of accusations on court?
Yeah, listen, that N word is the most misused word about abuse. Oh my goodness, I don't think a lot of people actually know the definition of that word. No offense, but it doesn't apply in every single case. It's control, right? We want to control the other person, and when they won't do what we want them to do, now we're using this N word, and that's not how that works. A lot of people, you know, they have different personalities, you know, and that's okay. You don't have to be the same person. So I always just walk them through that. Like, how do we get there? Like, when you tell me this happened, I'm like, why is this person the N-word? And they're like, because they did this. And I'm like, okay, no, you know, and look at it like, you know, for instance, like a person that files for divorce, right? Yeah. If the woman files for divorce and it's blindsiding to the husband, and then the woman moves on and now she has another significant other, it's unlikely that husband is going to want to settle with us. He's not going to be the most serious person. He's probably going to be a jerk. I've read messages and emails. But that doesn't make him the N word. That makes him someone who's probably hurt. And men and women deal with our emotions so differently. That's also a big thing when it comes to divorce. And, you know, we keep trying in the legal field to help people kind of cope with that and give them resources like Talking Parents app or our Family Wizard app to cut down that banter. And then we get hit with the, oh, well, he's such, you know, a narcissist. Like, no, and she's not either. These are just two hurt people that haven't learned how to manage a co-parenting relationship while in court, while dealing with children who are emotional because the parents are going through a divorce. While working, because these are, you know, some of our C-suite exec, like these people have like real jobs, like they're out there working and dealing with stress, and they haven't dealt with their emotions from that breakup. So now we have that N-word being flown around, and we get to court, and it's like, oh, well, she's a narcissist, like she's just hurt, and she needs to deal with her emotions, and you can't control that.
With that being said, have you worked with or against someone who really did actually display narcissistic traits and tendencies and abusive? And I'm going to kind of ask a couple of different questions. How is it different? Like, what do you recognize that's different between those cases? And, you know, for people who they're like, you know, I understand what you're saying, Asia, but in my situation, it really actually is. You know, what does that look like?
Oh, absolutely. So I have dealt with a few cases. Most recently, a case I had to settle where the father was 1,000% like that. I can read the messages. I can see. I can decipher. And, you know, you have to make a decision. This person will probably never change. Never. Everything you do will never be right. And they will use children to, you know, attack. because they know that's a weakness. And it took this client in particular year to realize that. And she just couldn't. And she fought back. And it wasn't a fight that you can win, right? Mm-hmm. You're trying to fight a battle that you can't win. That's an internal battle with that other person. It's almost as if their life mission is to destroy the other parent.
Yeah.
And they will do a lot of things. You have like even legal abuse where they will file motions that are frivolous. They will contact, you know, like have their attorney contact your attorney to run up your billable hours. They will, you know, send messages through the children. And, you know, kids did sometimes, but you know when a parent has told a child something. They will talk about you to your friends on social media. I mean, the list is endless. However, I still stick to that same thing, is that you have to have a coping mechanism when you're dealing with a parent who's a narcissist. Like, you have to, because they will destroy you. And if you don't know, like, the steps to take, they will literally wipe you out. It's exhausting. You know, I've watched my clients cry and really battle mentally because they didn't know what to do. And court is not the place. I'm going to tell you that now. Court is probably the worst place to be. Right. So when they start filing those motions, the court will see, you know, stick to your plan. Right. We set a plan. Stick to it. Right. We work through it. We know this isn't true. You have the, you know, evidence to show it's not. Be confident in that you're not doing anything wrong. But there are extreme cases where it's really bad. I mean, they can't get out of court because the other parent just won't let them. That's how they control them. And I've watched people give up, you know. And I've watched people really suffer, lose their jobs because they can't handle it. In those extreme cases, I mean, when a kid hits 18 in New York, they feel free because they no longer have to deal with that parent. So I always try to find, you know, mental health resources for them because it's not going to be so easy as just taking a deep breath. You actually have to have, you know, support to get through that.
I want to circle back to your male clients, because I think that one of the things that oftentimes gets talked about when it comes to narcissism and abuse and courtroom and divorce is the male narcissist. Is it different if you're representing your client who's a male and dealing with a female narcissist?
Yes, because it presents a little differently in men than women. And if you're not careful, if you can't identify it, it can be looked over really easily, and you will feel like you're insane. And I've watched my clients like really plead, like, no, you have to see this. You have to hear this. And when you catch it and you see it, it does present differently in women, especially when the mother is the residential parent. You start to see that differently, where if the dad is a non-custodial, non-residential parent, it presents differently for him too. Like, because it's just a different level of control. Like, you know, you have, you know, the piece to the puzzle in a different way. So the messages look different. The commentary looks really different. How they respond, how quickly they're angered, what they do. It's not always what you say, it's what they do to each other. And then you realize, oh, this person's definitely exercising that button. And, you know, I don't know why. I can't speak to it, why it ends up that way. But it does. It does present differently from mom to dad.
Asia, you are a wealth of knowledge. We could talk. I feel like we could talk all day. And so, especially if we start talking about Cowboys versus Eagles. So thank you so much for hopping on. Tell people where they can find you at if they are interested in hiring you, looking into your firm, or if they want to refer friends or family members to you. Where can they find you at? And then also all your social media handles.
Absolutely. So ASC Law Office across the board. So social media, Instagram, LinkedIn, everywhere, my website. Definitely spread the word. Our firm is rolling out a subscription program because we're really, really big on access to justice. So you're not going to court unprepared. You know, not everyone can afford us, and that's okay, you know, but at the end of the day, we still have something for everyone. So full service law firm, ASJLawOffice.com, on Instagram, Facebook, and everywhere.
And if you are watching this on YouTube or are listening to this on Apple or Spotify, make sure you guys go to the comment section down below. Let us know something that maybe you learned today, a takeaway that you got from today that maybe you didn't know prior to this episode. Also, go over to ASJ Law and make sure you guys show them some love on all their social media. All of Asia's information is going to be down in the show notes or the description, depending on where you are listening or watching this at. With all that being said, thank you so much. My name is Matthew Pfeiffer, and I will see you all in the next episode. You guys have a good one.